Here's a question I want you to sit with for a second. If the airplane could feel you making a mistake, should it be allowed to push back? Not take over, not fly itself, just nudge. A gentle pressure on the yoke in the opposite direction from the trouble you're about to get into. I'm Vector, and this is Clear Direct on Radio Hangar. We are coming to you from Oshkosh, Wisconsin, where the avionics hangars at AirVenture are packed shoulder to shoulder, and every glass panel on every display table is quietly doing something that a mechanical gyro never could. Today, we are going to break down one of the most interesting pieces of cockpit automation flying in general aviation right now. And it is not the one that lands the airplane for you, it is the one that most pilots never even notice is there. It is called electronic stability and protection. Garmin calls it ESP, and it lives in that gray zone between hand flying and autopilot, which is exactly why it is worth 20 minutes of your time. Before we get into it, this segment is supported by AviationSold.com. They make aviation challenge coins that mark the real milestones. First solo, private pilot, instrument rated, CFI, the whole journey. One coin at a time, beautifully made, solid in the hand, built to last a lifetime of flying. If there is a pilot in your life who just hit one of those marks, go take a look. AviationSold.com. All right, let's break this down. Start with the problem, because the technology only makes sense once you understand the accident it is trying to prevent. Look at the general aviation fatal accident record over the last few decades, and one category sits at the top year after year. Loss of control in flight, not engine failures, not weather, at least not directly. Loss of control, the airplane departs controlled flight, usually at low altitude, usually in a stall or a spin or a steep spiral, and there's not enough sky left to recover. Here is what most people miss about those accidents. The pilots involved were overwhelmingly not doing anything exotic. They were not pulling aerobatics. They were flying a base to final turn. They were distracted in a climb. They let the nose creep up while they fussed with a chart or a passenger or a radio. The airplane got slow, or it got steep, and by the time the human noticed, the recovery window had already closed. The data tells an interesting story here. In a huge fraction of these cases, the airplane was mechanically perfect. Nothing broke. The wing was still making lift right up until it wasn't. The failure was entirely one of attention, a slow, quiet drift toward the edge of the envelope that nobody was watching. So the engineers at the avionics companies asked a very specific question. If we already have an autopilot in this airplane, and that autopilot already has servos connected to the flight controls, and those servos already know the airplane's attitude and airspeed from the digital attitude and heading reference system, then why does all of that capability switch completely off the moment the pilot takes the controls to hand fly? That question is the seed of electronic stability and protection. Let me tell you what it actually does in plain terms. Picture your autopilot. When it is engaged, servos, which are just little electric motors geared to the control surfaces, move the yoke and the rudder for you. When you click the autopilot off and hand fly, those servos normally go completely limp, dead, they are just along for the ride. Electronic stability and protection keeps a small piece of that system awake even when you're hand flying. It watches your pitch attitude, your bank angle, and your airspeed against a set of limits the manufacturer built in. And as long as you stay inside those limits, it does absolutely nothing. You never feel it, you never see it. It is invisible. But let's say you roll into a steep turn, and you keep rolling. 45 degrees of bank, 50. As you pass the threshold, the aileron servo begins to apply a gentle force, nudging the yoke back toward wings level. Not yanking, nudging. It feels like the airplane developed a mild preference for level flight. And the deeper you push past the limit, the firmer that nudge becomes. Same thing in pitch. Let the nose drop toward a steep dive and the airspeed build, and it pushes to raise the nose. Let the nose come up and the airspeed bleed toward a stall, and it pushes the nose down. It is fighting very softly to keep you inside a box of safe attitudes and speeds. And here's the part I love as an engineer. If you disagree with it, you win. You can override every bit of that force with normal control pressure. It is not locking you out. It is not a hard limit. It is a spring pulling you back toward the center of the envelope, and you are always stronger than the spring. That distinction is the whole ball game, and it is worth understanding, because it sits right in the middle of one of the great arguments in aviation engineering. Let's zoom out to the two philosophies of envelope protection, because your airplane and the airliner in the pattern above you may handle this completely differently. On one side, you have the hard limit philosophy. This is the world of the fly-by-wire airliner. In that architecture, there is no cable from your side stick to the flight control surface. There is a computer in between, and in the normal operating mode, that computer simply will not let you exceed certain limits. Pull the stick fully back and hold it there, and the airplane will fly right up to the edge of a stall and sit there buffeting. But it will refuse to go over. The airframe protects itself. The pilot physically cannot command the airplane past the wall, no matter how hard they pull. On the other side, you have the soft limit philosophy. The airplane makes its objection known, it pushes, it shakes, it warns. But if the human insists, the human wins. The final authority stays with the person in the seat. Both of these philosophies have killed people, and both of them have saved people, and honest engineers will tell you that neither one is obviously correct. Hard limits protect you from the panicked overcontrol that stalls an airplane in a low-altitude upset. But hard limits also assume the computer always has good data, and there have been tragic cases where bad sensor inputs and aggressive automation logic fought a crew all the way to the ground. Electronic stability and protection plants its flag firmly on the soft side of that line. And for general aviation, I think that is the right call. And here's the reasoning. The single-pilot owner-flown airplane is a very different machine from a transport jet, with two trained crew and layers of redundancy. You want the automation helping, and you want it catching the slow, inattentive drift. But you do not want a piece of silicon deciding it knows better than you at 200 feet over the trees when it might be the one that is wrong. The nudge respects the pilot. The wall does not always. Now let's be honest about the limitations, because I promised you balanced and this technology is not magic first. This is not spin recovery. Electronic stability and protection is designed to keep you from ever getting to the stall, not to pull you out of a developed spin. If you ignore every nudge, override the pitch protection, and haul the airplane into an accelerated stall in a steep turn, the system is not going to save you. It is a fence at the edge of the cliff, not a net at the bottom. Second, it depends entirely on good data. Everything it does is built on the digital attitude and heading reference system and the air data computer knowing the truth about your attitude and your airspeed. Ice over the pitot tube, feed it garbage airspeed, and its judgment about the envelope degrades right along with yours. Automation is only ever as good as the sensors feeding it. Third, and this is the subtle one, there is a real human factors question about whether this kind of quiet, invisible help can slowly erode a pilot's stick and rudder feel. If the airplane is always gently keeping you inside the box, do you stop noticing when you drift toward the edge of it yourself? Do you lose the very skill the system is compensating for? That is not a hypothetical. That is a live debate in the training community. And it is the same debate we have about every layer of automation we have ever added to a cockpit, going all the way back to the first wing leveler. Here is where the same core technology grows some very interesting teeth, though. Because once you have a system that can sense the envelope and move the controls while the pilot is hand-flying, you can extend it. Garmin built two more layers on top of that foundation. One is underspeed protection. Fly with the autopilot on, and if the airplane gets dangerously slow, say you have the nose pitched up chasing an altitude the airplane simply does not have the power to reach, the autopilot will lower the nose on its own to keep flying speed rather than dutifully holding altitude all the way into a stall. Think about how counterintuitive that is. The autopilot's whole job is to hold your altitude, and this logic says, no, staying in the air matters more than the number in the box. That is a genuinely thoughtful piece of design. The other, and this one is dramatic, is a feature that will, if the bank angle gets truly extreme and the pitch goes wildly nose low, actually engage and roll the wings level and pull the nose back to the horizon by itself. A level button, in essence, and in some installations, a literal button on the panel that recovers the airplane from an unusual attitude. That is for the spatial disorientation case. The pilot in the clouds who has lost the horizon, whose inner ear is lying to them, who is one bad control input from a graveyard spiral. One press, and the automation flies the airplane back to straight and level. Notice the ladder we just climbed? It starts with a system that does nothing but a gentle nudge you never feel, and it ends three rungs up, with the airplane recovering itself from an upset. Same sensors, same servos, same underlying idea, just turned up in intensity as the situation gets more dire. That is elegant systems engineering, and it is exactly the kind of thing Vector gets excited about. Now, why does any of this belong in a conversation about Oshkosh? Because this is precisely how AirVenture works, and it always has. Walk the avionics hangars this week and you're standing inside aviation's real product launch pad. The glass panels on those tables did not appear fully formed. Almost everything that is now standard equipment in a certified airplane, the moving map, the synthetic vision, the digital autopilot, the envelope protection we just spent 20 minutes on, was shown to pilots first at shows like this one. Demonstrated on a bench, argued about in the aisles, refined based on what actual owners said when they put their hands on it, and here is the beautiful part of the ecosystem. A lot of these ideas proved themselves first in the experimental world, out on the home-built flight line, where a builder can install an autopilot and an attitude system that has not gone through the full certification gauntlet yet. The experimental category is where a lot of this automation gets its early flight hours. Pilots try it, they break it, they report back, and the mature, proven version of that technology eventually crosses over into the certified fleet. The kit airplane parked in the home-built rows and the factory airplane on the show center ramp are part of one long conversation about what automation should and should not do. Oshkosh is where that conversation happens out loud. So when you walk those hangars this week, I want you to do something. Find a booth with one of these integrated flight decks running on a demo stand. Ask the person behind the table to show you the stability protection. Grab the demo yoke, roll it past the limit, and feel the system push back against your hand. It is a strange sensation the first time. The airplane disagreeing with you, politely, and then ask yourself the question we started with: how much authority do you actually want to give the machine? Where is your personal line between help and interference? Because there is no single right answer, and the fact that the industry has landed on the gentle nudge, on the soft limit on you always winning the argument, tells you something about how much this community still values the pilot in the seat. Here's the honest timeline, to close the loop on it. This is not future tech. Electronic stability and protection, and its cousins are shipping today. Standard on a lot of new production singles and available in plenty of panel upgrades. The frontier now is pushing it down into simpler, cheaper airplanes and out into the retrofit market so that the 60-year-old trainer gets the same envelope protection as the brand new composite single. That is where the engineering effort is going. Not inventing the idea, making it affordable enough to save the pilots who need it most. My thanks to the Federal Aviation Administration's accident data, to Garmin's published descriptions of how these systems function, and to the avionics engineers who spend their careers thinking about that line between the human and the machine. You can find more at RadioHangar.com. And if you're walking the grounds at Oshkosh this week, go put your hands on one of those demo panels and feel the airplane push back. It will tell you more in 10 seconds than I did in 20 minutes. I'm Vector. Fly the airplane, watch the edges of your envelope, and let the automation be the backup, never the pilot. See you next time on Clear Direct.